pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106 is how you get in touch with the show if you so desire. Sil Cup, Joey Clark in about 30 minutes, and then about an hour and a half, Andrew Sorrell. So please stay tuned for that. Elections last night, we went through them in the first hour. Nationally, not a great sign for Republicans. Blue wall states really showed a lot more Democrat enthusiasm. A lot more engagement there just because of the dynamics of those races, though. Republicans generally have coalesced around an ideology, around candidates. The Democrats are having a civil war. And while I think long term that's not great for the health of the Democratic Party, especially in a presidential cycle, short term, it's going to generate a lot more enthusiasm, a lot more interest, which I do think carries over to into November. Long term, they got to figure this out. But Democrats are really good at singing out the same script, the same sheet of music. But right now, there's some real ideological divides. Much different from what had happened with Obama, Hillary, in 2008. I mean, was there that much difference between those two? These are real distinguishable ideological, philosophical differences within the Democratic Party. So some of that is that. There's obviously the animosity, the angst, the anti-Trump sentiment that is there. There's no way around that. That is going to be a net benefit for Democrats in 2026 and, you know, possibly 2028. But they have a civil war going on. Here's what I would say to my Republican friends. That's not going to be enough to carry you into midterms. There's a lot of this that's getting played up on Fox News this morning, on Newsmax, but that the whacked out Democrat socialist views are not going to be the hall pass, if you will, to hanging on to the majorities in November. I think it's this. You know, this is the same mistake Biden made. The economy's got to improve. And you can rally around economic reports and metrics. But there's just a sentiment out there that it is not improving, that it's not going great. And you can trot out all of these labor reports and inflation reports you want, and maybe that does help. But that's not going to be good enough. And then here locally, everything went as about as expected. I still think Representative Marcus had a big win, like 28 points, but it's just not, he got the 50% plus 8. Had he had 8 votes fewer, he would have fell short of the 50% threshold. And had this been a normal primary, he would have had to win it in a runoff. And so we've gone over that, why I think that's something that needs to be thoroughly examined. Leah, morning, Jeff. Could you explain to me why money and politics are so important? I always vote against who are spending the most money. Most people aren't paying that close attention, Leo. And it just, you know, let's say you have a ball game on or you're watching a sitcom and there's ads on and you start hearing, you like the ad. You know, it's subtle. And you hire the smartest people. They know which doors to knock. You hire people to knock on doors. You hire people to get the message out. I mean, funding a campaign infrastructure, there's a lot more to it than just, oh, wow, look at the dollar amount. That money is used for something. So we can't be too dismissive of it. You need to at least acknowledge the money. Now, sometimes you just have bad candidates. Luther Strange is probably a great example. I think Lindy Blanchard outspent Kay Ivey. Sometimes you just have money going down a rat hole. Hillary Clinton. You hire all these people who are, you know, branded as the smartest people, but they're not really that smart, it turns out. But money, it's not the, you know, I wouldn't say it's the most important thing. And I think, sometimes it's exaggerated, but if you're at a cash disadvantage, there's a lot of things you're unable to do. You got to work for it more. You got to knock on doors. You have good stump speeches. Billy asked, couldn't Trump have done like Clinton and said to take care of my people and reporters? Isn't he the boss? And he answered two assassination attempts, Billy. I mean, you're just barking up the wrong tree here. Trump is going to do what the Secret Service tells him to do. He's already been hit with a bullet on his ear. Yeah, y'all can try to make him out to be some kind of coward. No one's buying it. There's a photo of him with a bloody ear saying, fight, fight, fight. No one is going, as hard as you want to try, it's not going to work. Otter, anyone else relieved to see the end of Smirkin Sidwell? I thought Austin Sidwell was a good candidate. Perhaps if I was advising, a little angry at times, maybe roll that back a little. You don't want to be Mo Brooks. But he came off as a genuine guy. I hope he sticks with it. I think he did the right thing. He actually went and congratulated Jerry Carl in person on the after the election was all said and done. So hopefully he's still around. Hampton Harris was at a disadvantage. I think that he spent time, money, and energy campaigning in Mobile. Then Mobile pulled out from under him. When the districts changed, Rep. Marcus, on the other hand, had been campaigning in Dothan area because it was part of his old District 1. Therefore, he had a head start when it became District 2. Hampton did very well in Montgomery, where he had been campaigning from the start. Well, let's keep this in mind. Rep. Marcus, remember, we were told was a Baldwin County guy. I mean, everywhere I drove. And all the ads, he's one of us. He went to Fairhope High. He's from Spanish Fort. And he would do these videos of him driving around all of these sort of Baldwin County landmarks and talking about his fond memories. So, I think that was a wash. I think they both campaigned in the area. Well, and obviously Mobile being split, it was what it was. But you can say the same for Rhett. He had to go to Montgomery. He had to go into Wetumpka. He had to go into the River Region and campaign where Hampton Harris had been campaigning all along. So, I don't even know it's a disadvantage, at least population-wise. Hampton Harris had been running in a district where more of the people live than Rhett had. Pat, life got busy around 3 and I forgot to vote for the first time since I was 18. Wouldn't have mattered anyways, Carl still won. I took my 2-year-old to go vote with me yesterday. He wanted to write in a candidate. It was about where we thought it would be. I think it did a little bit better. I don't know what the turnout number is. We're going to have to take a look at that during the break here, see if I can track that down. But, if anything above 5% is probably an improvement from what we had expected. Sean, Once the boomers are gone, the political game will change. Imagine turnout with no boomers alive. Dismal. Old Rip Marcus, LOL. Jason, can we assume the intel came from Israel and the potential Trump attack? I'm sure Mike and our anti-Israel friends are happy we have an ally and we can depend on. But that's what I saw, that it was the Israelis. Yeah, these guys who are trying to make this out to be like Trump's cowardice on display, you're just doing it wrong. What if it were a 5% threat? What if moving the media could have, I mean, we don't know the particulars. What if that could have inflamed the situation more? Who knows how credible it was? I know they had to be super careful. The Secret Service's mandate is to protect the president at all costs, not necessarily cabinet and the media. So, you know, if you want to blame somebody, and there's, sure, that's fine. Blame the Secret Service. Well, is it Trump the boss? Well, he doesn't micromanage them. Although he is president, as far as security is concerned, I think that the big part of this is it's just going to be Trump putting faith, confidence, and being deferential to the Secret Service. But that's the way we're going to roll with it. That's the way the media are going to roll with it. And some of you are going to believe it no matter what. I say it's not going to matter. Trump's bad. Maybe we can impeach him for this. Big, big, bad orange man. Instead of taking the shoulder fire missile and being the better man for it, you know, he cowered away in a food truck. What a wimp. Just come on. 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the program. All you do is text me. Some other things going on in the news outside of the elections. We talked about electricity rates, Bellefonte still being Bellefonte up in northeast Alabama. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez breaking up with her boyfriend and freezing her eggs or something. I don't know why that's newsworthy, but that's on the list. Still data centers. I saw this in a segment on MS Now during the show, hammering Tuberville. So I guess Democrats are going, some of you guys who are so anti-data center here, there's a wagon to hitch to now. Doug Jones and Democrats. They're gonna run against them. They are going to run against data centers and all of the badness that comes with it. So there's a home for you if this is your issue. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew when I bit off more than I could chew.
Like a rhinestone cowboy, riding out on a horse in a star-spangled rodeo. Like a rhinestone cowboy, getting cards and letters from people I don't even know.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line if you need to be in touch, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Brandon, any surprises at the election yesterday? I not really a surprise. One, I think it's kind of news note, is that it was pretty weak. outcome, I think, in AL2 for Rhett Marcus, maybe about the bare minimum he needed. Ricardo asks, is Billy a Democrat? I believe so. DEI texter, this is the bird. This is the dude who flipped out over a bird flapping its wings in his office. Of course he wasn't scared when he was covered in ketchup. And, okay, DEI texter, if you want to, that's the way you want to take this. I'm sure the Reddit thread is there for you to listen in on this show. It'd be absolutely brilliant. Mike, luckily for you, you love data centers, cheap farm labor, and spending money on insources. Jerry Carl's still around for you, too. Oh, and I'm pretty sure he voted for the COVID bill that put us all in the inflation spiral we've been in since 2020. Okay, but, you know, Mike, you had your chance. Jerry Carl won by a big margin. I mean, where's the disconnect here? I hear from all you guys about how terrible Jerry Carl is, and then I look at the vote totals. What am I missing? Unnamed texture, half these people calling Trump a coward would stand by during a home invasion, watch their families be slaughtered. Yeah, those keyboard commandos, TV camera commandos, who don't believe in the Second Amendment, who don't believe in funding policing, that we need more funding for social workers or whatever. Okay. Look, we know what it is, unnamed texture. It's Trump derangement syndrome. There's nothing that Trump can do that is ever going to be good enough or is going to pass the test. They just don't like him. Everything he does is fallible. Everything he does is subject to some kind of critique. That's just how it's going to be. I don't know why we entertain these people. We spend more time trying to debunk their silliness. And then you just kind of realize they don't believe what they're saying. There's a real credibility gap here. I mean, I didn't sit around and praise Biden. But it wasn't like we invented stuff to criticize him over. He did a lot of the stuff that when they came after him was a lot of the stuff that, I mean, it was just self-inflicted wounds. The president being following Secret Service instruction is not a self-inflicted wound. It's a judgment call. The left has some really weird views on government and the hierarchy. Just really strange. Mike, with more. But Carl's the same thing as the Fox Low Information folks who keep putting meanwhile in office or Carl. Now, he has a track record. Also, Sybil was a good candidate, but Jerry Carl's a voting record. He voted on a half dozen things, maybe, that we could take issue with. Some of it he has acknowledged that it maybe wasn't the right vote at the time. But here's the deal. He won. And he didn't just win. He won 75% to Sidwell's 18. And then what else did we have? We had John Mills at 5.8% and Lucas Berger at 1.9%. He won. Sidwell's strongest county was Covington County, where it looks like just around 1,500 people voted. But this is what the people in this district want. We need to learn to respect that, at least for now. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Have a good time.
And then one day a wealthy customer bought the Indian maid. He took her home so far away.
Then he cried just south of Nashville, and he turned that car around. He said, this is where you get off, boy, because I'm going back to Alabama. As I stepped out of that Cadillac, I said, mister, many thanks. He said, you don't have to call me mister, mister. The whole world called me Hank. He said, Drifter, can you make folks...
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning, 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with me, your show host. All you do is text me. Still to come on the program about an hour from now, our state auditor, Andrew Sorrell, will make time for us, so stick around for that. Joining us now, however, it's been a little bit since we last spoke to him, but Joey Clark from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery joins us. Joey, how are you?
Doing great. Hope you are, too.
Yeah, glad to hear from you. I don't know what I missed while I was gone, but I know last night we had some elections, and I don't know how closely you've looked at the AL2 numbers, but, you know, I think Rep. Marcus did just what he needed to do, just barely, though. If this had been an election where there would have been a runoff, he would have missed a runoff by 8 votes out of all those votes cast yesterday. But he doesn't, I mean, no matter what, he could have won by 1 vote and he still would have been the nominee. But I guess I look at it and you look at it in the sense of how does he match up against Shamari Figures, just at a structural disadvantage, a Democrat in Alabama, but he's going to be a well-funded one, and I still think that Representative Marcus is a weak candidate.
Yeah, I don't think he's the strongest. I mean, from interviewing him once in person, I mean, he's a likable enough guy, but he seemed like he was fresh out of the factory. And I don't mean that personally against Rhett. It just seemed like there was like, well, let's just get across the finish line on this. But you know, when he relaxed, I actually ended up liking the guy. I don't know. It's just all turnout numbers for the general. And I'll admit I was rooting for the underdogs like a Hampton Harris up in my neck of the woods. But I figured, you know, with the Trump endorsement, with the Senator Brett endorsement and the money that Marcus had this. So to me, it's not a question of the endorsements or the people to get out there and support him in Republican politics. It's a matter of how many Republicans show up in November. And if enough show up, I don't know what Shamari Figures could do to actually get over the top.
But I do think it's going to be messy on the way there. And, you know, our mutual friend Dick Brubaker was on yesterday. I think he said it to both you and I, that the tax liens on Rhett and just knowing that he voted to raise the gas tax. The Hampton Harris guys, the Dave Matthews guys, all the people in that AL2 race, they didn't have the resources. They had to rely on these kind of fringe figures to really push their message. And I just don't think that works. You just got to be up on air. If you got something good, then you got to be up on air with it, get as many eyeballs as possible. Shamari Figures are going to be able to do that. He's already got the media in his back pocket. I mean, how many AL reporter stories do you think they're going to do attacking Rhett? Well, or maybe that they could get the establishment to get them to call some of these dogs off, but certainly AL.com is going to look at it. I think that there's a little bit there that's going to force the NRCC to come into Alabama and have to spend a little bit of money where they probably need to be using those resources elsewhere.
Yeah, it's just, I agree with you that they're going to have to come in and spend more money. And the tax lien thing is ugly. And Dick did mention that on my show on Monday. And I think also Red is, like I was saying, he seemed a little fresh out of the factory. He wasn't the quickest on his feet. And so I don't know if we're going to get an actual debate. But I don't know. I think it ends up being a bit of a wash. You take a few negatives. Shamari Figures does have the numbers in the media. But you just spend a little bit of money showing which team Shamari Figures is playing for. You don't even have to go after him personally, unless I guess there's something there. I don't know. But you can just go after, you know, the communist Democrats. And I think you encourage enough folks to get out and vote. I don't know. I'm not certain about the general election. It's more about where is the whole national trend? What is sort of the Fox News trend? Where's the energy in that regard? And then the last part, the cherry on top, is, I guess, how much the national parties want to spend here locally.
Yeah, well, I think they'll weaponize it. And you know, Shamar figures will outperform the Democrat ballot in AL2. And the other problem, and this really hits home, I guess, in your neck of the woods. I mean, Shamar figures he is, yes, from Mobile, but he's going to be a Montgomery candidate against a Wiregrass candidate. I don't know if that matters anymore like it used to. We do straight ticket voting in Alabama, and there's so much at the top of the ballot. Brett Marcus is easily the favorite, probably a sizable favorite. But I do think this is different. And like I said, why it matters is because national Republicans, they need this seat. They want this seat. They're not going to take any chances, and they're going to have to come in, and they're going to have to spend a little bit of cash to keep him afloat where they ought to be spending it in a blue wall state or something.
Yeah, I mean, they need to spend the money here. Like, I don't think they're going to get away with not supporting in a robust way. And by the way, you're right. I think Shamar figures is going to outperform the general generic Democrat ballot. And there is a dynamic of anytime there's a question of they're rigging the game against us. And this, I guess, goes for both sides of the political aisle. But in particular, they're taking away black representation. They don't want us to have it's a great get out the vote method. Like, they're trying to take away our vote is a great way to get people to go vote. And so I think you'll have a little extra energy there. I don't know. I don't think anybody should be comfortable, and especially the money people should spend that money. But, yeah, Trump endorsement, deep red state, get out the vote, straight ballot voting. I don't know. Like, I still would bet on Marcus winning this thing, but it'll be there'll be a little anxiety before Election Day.
A couple of other thoughts from yesterday, and I think you look at Wisconsin and Minnesota – there's two things here. Democrats way outperformed Republicans in both those states, and Wisconsin is a blue wall swing state, but it wasn't even close. But here's the thing. In Wisconsin, you had a very competitive gubernatorial primary. You did not have that on the Republican side. So there was not as much intrigue. But clearly there's more enthusiasm, more interest in Democratic Party politics. I mean, obviously outside of Alabama. I mean, I just think this is the writing on the wall for November. I hate to say it. I know my audience hates it when I say this, but, you know, they're not looking at it. The idea that, hey, those guys are crazy, they're DSA, they're socialist, that's not going to be enough this cycle. However, they yesterday showed us that there's a real civil war. I mean, it was a close election. Mm-hmm. It went late into the evening in Wisconsin before they declared a winner. And, you know, that being said, I think later on down the road, this is the fight that's going to go take place. And yeah, there's going to be a lot of hurt feelings along the way.
Oh, yeah. And I think just amen to what you're saying about the general energy on the left right now. And I mean, it's history. Unless you get some crazy anomaly, the party out of power tends to win back the House. And I think they're going to probably get back the House. I don't want that to happen. It'll be a bunch of political theater and gridlock, but so be it. But to your point about the civil war within the Democratic Party, the way I would put it, especially historically, it's starting to make sense in my mind, is the professional class ended up winning the argument of the 1960s. You had the more radicals in the streets. You had the folks who were literally communists who called themselves progressives, who were, you know, active in the streets and that sort of organizing. But they didn't end up winning elections, and a lot of them realized, oh, we lost this sort of radical game. Let's all become professionals in the media, in the university system, yada, yada, yada. And I think what we've seen, especially after COVID, is the Biden and Harris, especially that clown show in 2024, was the last ride of sort of your old school professional class. Now, don't get me wrong, there'll still be top flight people pulling the strings and running things, but the gatekeeping they were able to do for decades, I don't think is going to work quite as well as they would hope with this civil war. I expect maybe not on a presidential ticket, but on a lot of people driving the car, it won't be the buttoned up Democrats. It'll be more your radicals. And I think we're going to start to see the effect of a generation who has made their names on X and Twitter and YouTube and whatnot. So, like, whether you like him or not, Hassan Piker has got a huge following. AOC's got a huge following. And I think that stuff is the boomers retire out, because you got to think years down the road, this stuff will start to have more of an effect on actual elections.
Yeah, you know, that, but the energy is there. This will be a 28 phenomenon. It's the problem right now, and it's all economy, and I think in some ways maybe not quite as egregious. The Trump administration is making the same mistake the Biden guys did. Hey, everything's going good. Hey, see, inflation report today, very good. Hey, you know, gas prices are coming down. This is all good. This is all great. People just don't feel it. They have to feel it. They have to sense it. And that, you know, perception is more important right now, and the perception's on their side. They've got to figure that out. And the one thing I would say, rather than paying lip service to all of this like they are, come up with a plan. What's the plan here? What's the plan to make things better? At least talk about it in a looking into the future sense, rather than patting yourself on the back about what you already did. Because if you're going to do that, you're going to have to answer for the Iran stuff, and there's no real good answer there to me.
Well, and that's the problem, is as much as I think the vibes have shifted in a positive direction since, let's call it the Epstein summer, I think with Epstein than Iran, you lost a lot of independent voters who voted Republican in 2024. Now, do those folks go to the Democrats or do they stay home? Does it matter? But you're just dropping numbers that were going Republican, especially like the whole Charlie Kirk strategy of younger men. You got to wonder how many will actually show up in what is usually more, say, 65 and up game during the midterm. So I think, though, the administration's in a tough spot, because their basic argument, I think this is the truth, is like, just give us more time. And we're sorry about the Iran thing. That really, I think that is put a huge problem on the inflation numbers. And even if you're looking at core inflation that removes food and energy, it's still at 2.5, 2.4. And so rates don't look like they're going to come down anytime soon from the Federal Reserve level, even with a new chairman. So they're sort of stuck in like, well, just wait. And it's one thing for Kevin Hassett to go on CNBC or Fox Business and say, look, we have the best manufacturing numbers and investment numbers and generations. But to your point, that's not what people feel. People feel the gas pump. And people are also, I think, giving up. Like, we have the largest number, I think, in our history of people not in the workforce. I just saw a report today that disability claims are at astronomical levels. What makes you wonder, is that many people actually disabled in this country? Here's the final thing I'll say. The way socialists actually make a foothold is because the GOP and, say, the corporate Democrats didn't address the issues that we're talking about, the bread and butter kitchen table issues and things like the debt and deficit. People talk about this every election cycle, and they never actually solve the problems. And I don't think the socialists will solve those problems and make them worse, but they will use that all day, every day in order to win elections. So I don't know, just be careful with, as you said, all the happy talk, and why not do hard things? And, you know, I was let's do the Javier Milei wrecking ball approach at the beginning of the Trump administration, and they chose a different path. So here we are.
Yeah, and they just don't seem to be, like I said, very thinking and proactive. It's what we could have done, what we should have done, et cetera. And that to me is a losing strategy. And I don't think the whole DSA phenomenon, it's really getting a lot of play on Fox and Newsmax and, you know, your typical conservative outlets, is going to be a hall pass for 2026. I just don't. I think that's problematic. They said long term, yes, you could do something there. These midterm elections are not like that. And if you're not looking at the bottom line totals in these states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, these Midwestern states, Pennsylvania, and the way, you know, some of these elections are going, then you're really missing the point. The Democrat enthusiasm is way, 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 way higher than Republican.
Well, and it might be there are a lot of Republicans who are really good at this stuff and who may be currently elected who, you know, hope for the best, but they see Democrats are going to take the House. So why stick our necks out, put some big plan out? Why not wait with Rubio and Vance in the wings? We can present our plans in 28 and have this big fight in 28. And honestly, it'll be gridlock, but it might be to our benefit to have a big fight with the Democrats running with the House for the next 2 years as we run into a presidential cycle.
One more, South Carolina and Lindsey Graham's sister, Darlene. she didn't have a great night. I mean, she's in the runoff. Yeah. She ran a plurality. This Ralph Norman, he's a Freedom Caucus guy. I think that she gives me Luther Strange vibes in South Carolina. And I think Trump could take an L here in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I liked the honorary appointment, sort of a hat tip to Lindsey Graham. But when she said she's going to stay in this, I'm like, I don't know. Part of me was just like,
you're bequeathing a U.S. Senate seat. And I don't – South Carolina always went with Lindsey Graham for whatever reason. It was always a mystery, but it was just because they did the same thing with Strom Thurmond for all those years. But yeah. On this one, I don't think they're gonna give it to her necessarily. I don't know what 2 weeks. We talk about having election fatigue in Alabama. You imagine what it's like in South Carolina right now. In 2 weeks, you're gonna have a runoff. There's real problems there.
I think Trump, you're right, is setting himself up for a big L. And I don't know. It's very, at the end of the day, I've been really focused on the human interest side. And I think Lindsey Graham won elections over and over again because he was just that much a force of a personality.
Right.
And, a name does, you don't transfer that personality just having the same last name and a great story, but it's not, I don't know. We got to get back to like, okay, now's time. If you have a senator who died all of a sudden that was senator for years, we got to actually have a real fight here. And I like this Ralph fella. I think more Freedom Caucus people is a good thing in the United States Senate.
I tend to agree with you on that. Hey, Joey, folks will find you. Where can they look?
At the Joey Clark on X or Joey Clark Live on YouTube.
Joey Clark, ladies and gentlemen. Joey, we appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Jeff.
All right, let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Plour Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106 is the text line. That's how you get in touch with the show. So to come on the program, Andrew Sorrell will be with us. So please stay tuned for that. Let's see here. What do we got here? Damn Yankee. I'm not sure your data is correct. I was just in Ohio and didn't notice a strong Democrat position from anyone I know. What do you mean by that? I was just in Ohio too. Maybe Ohio's not the best example. It is trended red over the last few cycles, but the Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan certainly feel more Democrat right now. And the data backed that up. Ohio, you could see Democrats pick up seats. You absolutely could there. When I talk to NRSC guys, when I talk to other senators, they point to Ohio, Sherrod Brown, that, Ohio is not out of the woods. So, maybe you and I read different newspapers. Hey, Jeff, do you think Luther Strange and the Graham chick get the full Senate pensions? No, I don't think that they do. I mean, they could, if she served long enough, Darlene Graham would have to serve a certain amount of time, but no, just as an interim senator, no. Don, good morning, Jeff. I was glad to see Jerry Carl win the Republican ticket. I'm still dismayed about how many people did I get out and vote and exercise their civic duty. I just wanted your opinion. So I believe Mr. Carl is aware of legislation that's been around for many years. It's called the Fair Tax. There's actually information available to everyone at fairtax.org. What are your thoughts on this respect? Respectfully, sir. The Fair Tax we've been talking about for decades. overhauling. So the fundamental problem here is that this sounds good, right? A fair tax sounds good. And it is, you know, it is meant to create fairness in the tax system. The fundamental problem is that a lot of the federal government's power comes through the tax code, and they're just not going to walk away from it. They're not going to cede that power. That's the big part of it. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. My son is on.